Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The New Hampshire presidential primary is next Tuesday, and the Democratic candidates are madly crisscrossing the state in search of votes. And joining us now is VPR's Liam Elder Connors, who's been following the Sanders campaign. Hey, Liam, great to hear from you.
Hey, Bob.
So, Liam, you attended a special, I think it was called a Politics and Eggs breakfast event this morning. Tell us about it. What was Sanders' message?
Yeah, so the Politics and Eggs breakfast is this, it's actually a series of talks that happen at St. Anselm's College. Most of the candidates do these events, so it's a breakfast and a bunch of people fill up a room and they listen to the candidate give their message and then get to ask questions afterwards. And the sort of quirk in this event is that candidates sign wooden eggs before the event starts. And so Sanders came in, you know, was signing these wooden eggs that were on the tables in there. And his message this morning was very much in line with, you know, Sanders' normal stump speech, talking about income inequality, access to health care, you know, touting Medicaid or Medicare for all. Though what struck me about this speech this morning was he took a little bit more of a pointed jab at former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who, you know, as we know, has also claimed victory in the Iowa caucus like Senator Sanders has. And Senator Sanders sort of took a moment to just sort of say that Senator or that former mayor Buttigieg had, you know, many billionaire donors. So here's what he said.
How do we feel when we have candidates in the Democratic Party right now? And I'm reading some headlines from newspapers about Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg has most exclusive billionaire donors of any Democrat. That was from Forbes.
So there he's contrasting himself with, you know, the other candidate who's kind of emerging as the front runner in the primary right now and saying, you know, that Mayor Pete Buttigieg has a lot of billionaires supporting him. And, you know, I, Bernie Sanders, am supported by, you know, many, many people around the country, not billionaires. And so, you know, kind of making that contrast between the two as we go into New Hampshire.
And Liam, we just saw a poll this morning that showed that Mayor Buttigieg is within a point of Bernie Sanders. And if you looked at it over the last week or so, you see that gap really narrowing down. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens at the debate tonight. So, Liam, as you talk to voters over there, what are the kinds of issues that are resonating with folks in New Hampshire? What are they concerned about?
You know, honestly, it depends on who you ask. Everyone's got a little bit of a different answer. One of the first places that I went was in Ringe, New Hampshire, which is a town that is in Cheshire County, which is a county that borders both Vermont and Massachusetts. It's also a county where Sanders did really well in the last presidential primary. He got about 70% of the vote there. And when I was in Ringe, I stopped by the town museum and met Carl Pruder. And he told me that for him, the issue, it was less like one specific issue that was concerning or driving him, but more what kind of person the candidate is.
The character's a real issue, and I think that's something I look for. So,
and by character, do you mean, like, what do you mean exactly? Like,
well, you know, do you really believe in anything? You know, are you honest? Do you have integrity? That sort of thing.
Pruder hadn't made up his mind yet. He mentioned that he liked Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, but also said he liked Warren. He liked Senator Sanders. He liked Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And he hadn't really made up his mind yet. So he's still sort of figuring that out. And, you know, nearby to where I talked to Carl Pruder is Franklin Pierce University, which is a small liberal arts college in the town. And that's where I talked with student Ishmael Johnson. And he told me he really likes Bernie Sanders because of Sanders' policy on student debt.
School costs a lot of money, especially going to a private school. This place is like $50,000. So that would like help a lot of kids out. Even like say like kids that are on scholarships, just like the little money they have to pay, they might not need to do that. So that would help them in the long run, especially in the future when they graduate.
Yeah,
and
so
Liam, I have
views.
To... Yes, I have to believe that the Sanders campaign, as well as the other senators, Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar and Michael Bennett, are feeling gee, they've been stuck in Washington for the impeachment trial. They really got to make up for lost time. As you look at Senator Sanders' schedule over the next 3 or 4 days, are you seeing everything just jam-packed?
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny. Right before I came in here to talk with you, I was looking at my email and I got another email from the Sanders campaign saying we're adding more events to the New Hampshire schedule. And, you know, when I got here 2 days ago, there were a couple of things. But now, you know, tomorrow there are 7 events, you know, from Canvas Kickoff, Get Out the Vote events to a forum focused on reproductive rights, town halls, rallies. I mean, he's really stepping it up here over the next couple of days, I think, really focusing on just being president in the state. And I think all the other candidates are doing the exact same thing.
And Liam, as we mentioned, there's another debate this evening in New Hampshire with 7 of the Democratic presidential candidates. Do you get any sense how this is going to unfold for the Sanders campaign? Is it important for him to differentiate his policies with those of the more moderate candidates?
You know, I expect we'll hear some of that. I mean, that's sort of been, you know, the familiar refrain that we've heard in all the other debates so far. I would imagine that in this particular debate tonight, Sanders is going to certainly tout, you know, his claim to victory in Iowa. You know, he's, I think, probably going to talk a lot about that. And one thing he mentioned at the breakfast today that I'm sure he'll bring up again is that while the turnout wasn't as strong as he was hoping for in Iowa, he said there were still lots of new and younger caucus goers. And as we know, Sanders has repeatedly said that the way for him to win both the primary and the general election is to turn a lot of people out to vote. So I would expect that he'll focus on that. And, you know, the fact that this morning he brought up, you know, the number of billionaires that, according to news reports, have donated to Buttigieg. And I would imagine he'll be bringing that back up as the race between the two of them is tightening.
And Liam, in a short period of time, you have visited many towns and communities and counties over in New Hampshire. Where else have you been? What have you seen?
Yeah, so I spent a little bit of a time the other afternoon up in Gilsum, New Hampshire, which is a small town of about 800 people. And I bring that up kind of because no one there would talk with me. It was just one of those places where people weren't answering the doors when I knocked on them. The local businesses folks didn't want to talk to me. You know, the general store had just closed down, and that's usually like a go-to place to find folks who are willing to talk about politics. But I bring that up, and what I think is striking is that while New Hampshire is obviously in the national limelight right now, everyone's really paying attention to what's going on. Not everyone living in the state is living and breathing the primary in the same way. So there's a kind of a variety of opinions out there. But, you know, you go over to another place like Derry, which is another town that I visited, and you'd meet some folks like Holly McDonald and Courtney Newberry, who are nurses. They work overnight shifts. And for them, issues that are really important are health care. They say they see firsthand how people don't have access to health care, and there's a lot of issues around affordability. So here's something. Here's them talking to me in the diner.
But money's the big one. People first think, how much do you think that's going to cost me? How much does it cost for the scan? I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't.
But that's not part of our job as nurses either, which is really unfortunate. We just want to
care
for people, make sure they're healthy, do the things that are appropriate care, right, that to assess them. And it's really disheartening when
someone's first question is, is there another test?
You know, I will say that they both told me that they are not supportive of Medicare for all. And they actually also haven't made up their mind on who they're going to vote for in the Democratic primary. Both of them told me, you know, they work long overnight shifts and they really haven't had time to research candidates yet.
VPR's Liam Elder Connors, many thanks for your great reporting from New Hampshire.
Thanks, Bob.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Recent polls in New Hampshire indicate the race for first place is tightening between Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg, with Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden trailing those two candidates. But a lot can happen over the next 96 hours. And as we've mentioned, there is another candidate debate scheduled for this evening. Well, joining us right now to take the pulse of this race are two people who've been following the Democratic primary contest very closely. Matt Dickinson, who's a political science professor at Middlebury College, and Matt was out in Iowa this week to witness the caucus system firsthand. And also Ted Cohn, who is the dean of the College of Liberal Arts at Norris University. Ted, let's start with you. As you look at the results of the Iowa caucuses, what stands out as being important from those results?
I don't know. I keep thinking about Iowa, New Hampshire, and what makes them important is the fact that they're first. Are they bellwethers of the rest of the contest in the other states coming up on Nevada, South Carolina, Super Tuesday? You know, I look at Iowa, and they had something like 16% turnout, while I think in 2016, New Hampshire had 56% turnout for its primary. So absolutely, Buttigieg's ability to claim victory is astounding. I mean, several months ago, I wouldn't have thought that at all. Bernie Sanders' late surge, that surprised me as well. And Joe Biden coming in fourth. And the money aspect, too, right? Joe Biden's money matches his fourth place finish, while after Iowa, we also just had Senator Sanders' campaign announce a $25 million haul in January. So, you know, Biden's fourth place finish, very low money on hand. Sanders doing very well, clearly going into New Hampshire, and lots of money on hand for the long haul.
Bernie Sanders talked about organizing the largest grassroots campaign in American political history, and he thought he was going to have a pretty solid victory in Iowa. Did he fall a little short of his expectations?
It's hard to say because, of course, the Sanders campaign will say that in terms of people's first pick before they went through the process of winnowing out unviable groups of caucusers because they didn't meet the 15% threshold. Actually, Bernie Sanders had the most votes of the preliminary caucus goers. So I think I assume the Sanders campaign is going to really try to hang their hat on that. But at the same time, I mean, 16% voter turnout. If the Sanders campaign is saying we're the campaign that's going to get people out to vote, I mean, it didn't happen in Iowa. It'll be very interesting to see if the 56% voter turnout in 2016 is matched or exceeded.
Today in this part of the program, we're looking at the Democratic presidential race. With us, Ted Cohn, who's the dean of the College of Liberal Arts at Norwich University. We're trying to connect with Matt Dickinson over at Middlebury College. We're having some few technical problems with that, but we hope to sort those out very quickly and hear from Matt and get his thoughts about the Democratic race. Ted, you were talking about Joe Biden. Joe Biden comes in fourth in Iowa. It looks like he might come in third or fourth in New Hampshire. Is this unexpected, or is this a little bit of a problem for the Biden campaign?
I think it is unexpected. I think it is a bit of a problem because this is what we're talking about right now, and this is what all the media outlets are talking about. At the same time, South Carolina is February 29th. Joe Biden is poised to do a double-digit victory over his nearest rival. And then March 3rd is Super Tuesday, where Joe Biden leads in Florida and Texas, even though Sanders leads in California. He could be that we're not even thinking about Iowa and New Hampshire within a couple weeks. If we're waking up on March 1st and talking about Joe Biden's strength with Hispanic Americans, with African Americans, that you can't win the Democratic primary and you can't get elected president without those important block of Democratic voters, then, you know, Iowa and New Hampshire might be far in the rearview mirror by March 1st and March 3rd.
And how about Elizabeth Warren? She did fairly well in Iowa. Here, New Hampshire, how important is New Hampshire for the Warren campaign?
I think for anybody from Massachusetts, doing well in New Hampshire is absolutely key. And this is why we've had historically so many Democratic candidates who have gone into the field pinning their hopes on a good showing in their backyard of New Hampshire, whether it's been Howard Dean from Vermont or John Kerry from Massachusetts. A Massachusetts senator absolutely has to have a good showing. I'm not sure if a third place showing would be good enough for Elizabeth Warren.
And of course, after New Hampshire, there's the Nevada caucuses and then the primary in South Carolina. Would you anticipate that this group of four or five people, including Senator Klobuchar in that group, pretty much hang as candidates until Super Tuesday?
I would think so. I mean, you never know. I was amazed when Jeb Bush, you know, dropped out of the race before Super Tuesday, before even his home state of Florida could vote. So you never know if you're looking at, you know, the people who are going to be at the debate tonight. Really, is Andrew Yang going to stay on very long? Is Tulsi Gabbard going to stay on too long? Wild cards are, of course, billionaires like Tom Steyer, Michael Bloomberg, simply because they have deep enough pockets to last until June. But it's really hard to say if you can't muster the momentum, if you can't muster the policies and process stories that talk about your campaign, if you're going into Super Tuesday only with people talking about who your supporters are going to switch to and where the money's going to go, it's a really bad sign before Super Tuesday, and it might shake up the crowd before then.
I just want to let our listeners know we are having some technical difficulties with our phone system. I know a lot of people are trying to call in and tell us their opinion. Unfortunately, we are unable to take those calls at this moment, but we're going to do everything we can to get those phones on the air and also to bring Mac Dickinson from Middlebury College in on the conversation as well. But right now I'm talking to Ted Cohn about the Democratic race. Ted, you said you were really surprised by Pete Buttigieg. His turnout, his vote in Iowa. What's going on there? What do you attribute to this surge?
I think a couple things. Number one, he did have a very good ground organization in Iowa, and I think his ability to put that together surprised me, unlike people like Bernie Sanders who have been there before, people who had national standing. Number two, I think in an age of the poor communication skills of Donald Trump, I think for the base of progressive voters and really strong Democratic voters among Iowa caucusers, having someone like Pete Buttigieg, a veteran, Rhodes Scholar, somebody who doesn't just answer in complete sentences but in complete paragraphs, somebody loved not just by the New York Times crowd but by the New Yorker crowd, I think he became a very popular candidate once people got to know him. But that late surge past Sanders, Warren, and Biden and Klobuchar, national figures, that was astounding. And the final thing is I think we're living in the age of authenticity. I think there are times when Warren, Biden, perhaps even Sanders, lifelong politicians don't necessarily come off as authentic. And I think Pete Buttigieg has done a very good job telling his story, having a narrative that people have flocked to.
I am happy to say that we've got our telephone issues resolved and we can bring Matt Dickinson into this conversation. Matt, welcome to the program.
Glad to be with you, Bob. Sorry, Ted, I've missed some of your commentary, but I'm sure it's been great.
It's okay, Matt. You can make up for it.
So, Matt, as I mentioned, you were out in Des Moines on caucus night. A lot of confusion out there. There may be a re-canvassing. But what are some of your key takeaways from the Iowa caucuses?
Well, one interesting aspect was the effort, the concerted effort, not only at the precinct I was at, but at other precincts from people I'm talking to, among the moderates to basically, when it was clear that Klobuchar and Biden were not viable in the 15%, to try to orchestrate a stop Bernie Sanders movement by shifting to Buttigieg. And if you look at the vote totals statewide from the first to the second vote, you can see Buttigieg gained the most votes. And I think that was a big part of it, that dynamic, that effort, which is unique to a caucus because you have multiple voting opportunities, that effort by the moderate, the Biden supporters, the Klobuchar supporters, to shift over to Buttigieg, in part because, for the reasons Ted's talked about, Buttigieg is a strong candidate. But clearly, in this case, he wasn't their first choice, but he ended up being their final choice.
And Matt, did you hear from folks that, you know, the number one priority is the Democrats feel they have to have a candidate who can defeat President Trump, and maybe some positions on different issues are not as important as having the very strongest candidate?
That was it. The rationale among these moderates that I talked to in why they were not shifting over to, say, Elizabeth Warren was because they're worried that if the Democrats nominate a progressive candidate, although that may appeal to sort of the hardcore progressive wing of the party, when you shift to the general election, they're going to have a problem running up against President Trump, and it's going to cost them dearly in the general election. That's their fear.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Naomi, who's calling from Moncton. And I just want to say we have a very limited amount of time. So, Naomi, if you could be as brief as possible, it would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, there seems to be an assumption in the mainstream media that Bernie is too far to the left. I think if anybody's going to deal with being accused of being a socialist, Bernie will do the best job with it, and Trump is going to accuse anybody he runs against as being a socialist. And I think Bernie is much better at fighting and really saying what he has to say and not compromising.
So. All right, Naomi, thank you very much for your observation and your thoughts. Matt, there seems to be a divide among folks, political analysts, saying on one hand, Sanders is the person who can really rally the Democratic base. You know, that's what's needed to go up against President Trump. And then there are other folks who are being more pragmatic and saying, yes, but the Democrats need more of a centrist candidate. Naomi thinks, the first one is true. Let's get the base energized, and let's have this be a campaign where there are big differences of opinion on issues. What do you think about that?
Well, one thing we've seen is a slight erosion in support for Elizabeth Warren, and most of that support shifted over the last couple of weeks in Iowa and in New Hampshire to Bernie Sanders. And the reason, I think, is what Naomi brings up. He is by far the most authentic voice for that progressive wing. You know what he stands for. There's no apologies. There's no adjustment. That goes a long way. I think it's uncertain whether the Democratic Party positions, as announced by Warren and by Bernie Sanders, is a position that's going to win in the general election. This is why we have elections, Bob. I mean, we can talk all we want about polling data and so on, but ultimately the voters have to go into that voting booth. And it's not simply the positions. It's, as you pointed out and Ted pointed out, it's can you beat Donald Trump? This is as much a referendum on Trump and the first 4 years of his presidency as it is adopting a progressive or a moderate policy stance by supporting the Democrat.
Let's talk to Brian, who's calling from Colchester. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, in regards to whether Sanders is too far left to win in a general election, if I were advising him, I would get away from the socialist label, because if you just look at policy, it's really not a radical situation at all. But unfortunately, the Republicans are going to, as somebody else said, hang that label on anyone and use it as a scare tactic to people that just don't have time to look under the hood.
Okay, Brian, thanks very much. Ted, I remember when Bernie Sanders ran in 2016, he gave a speech at a small college in Virginia where he addressed this whole issue of democratic socialism. And he said, hey, folks, it's really not that radical an idea. Let's go back to FDR. Remember, we had Social Security. People thought that was a really radical idea. LBJ had Medicare. We've had Medicaid. And he saw his roots in the democratic socialism of the Democratic Party. Is that message not getting through?
I think Brian's right. I think it's people don't take the time to look under the hood. You know, if we were in Europe, democratic socialism would be a mainstream party. But we associate as Americans, we never really had a viable socialist party since Eugene Debs over 100 years ago. And there are reasons for that, partly because of the Cold War, partly because of anarchism, partly because of labor unrest. We have kind of turned our back as a country on that label socialism because it seems radical. It seems foreign. It seems European. And so I agree with Brian. It's not – it's a great to try to use your soapbox to educate the people to understand what you mean by democratic socialism. But most people can't look under the hood and will not be able to get past the label.
Matt, we heard from our first caller, Naomi, who said, you know, it doesn't matter who the Democratic candidate is. President Trump is going to call that person a socialist. So that being the case, what do the Democrats have to lose?
Well, an election to start with. I understand the logic here, but there are differences, and these differences are quite clear just looking among the Democratic candidates on policy positions. And I think Donald Trump is going to come after whoever the Democrats nominate, but I think it's a plausible argument to say, as Ted is pointing out here, that the agenda that Bernie Sanders is pushing, or perhaps Elizabeth Warren, is an agenda that's viewed as farther left than the agenda that Joe Biden or Amy Klobuchar or even Pete Buttigieg is pushing. And we're going to see this on the debate stage tonight, but we have seen it repeatedly at candidate rallies. Again and again, Klobuchar and Biden said in Iowa, vote for me, I can unify. I don't polarize the way my opponents do. I don't push extremist policies that are going to turn off half the electorate. This is a real issue, and I think it goes beyond just Donald Trump trying to sort of smear all Democrats with a broad brush. There is really a distinct policy difference in the agenda that Democratic nominees are going to bring to the table.
Let's see if we can get a quick call in from Henry in Montreal. Hi, Henry. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm not an American, but I certainly follow very closely, as many people outside of the U.S. do. And I think I'm representative in saying that the main question is who can best keep Donald Trump from continuing to run the most powerful country in the world. And I think that explains why Pete Buttigieg is doing so well. I think that the question is, in a campaign, one against one, who's got the ability, resources to think on their feet, to move quickly, to respond to the kind of below-the-belt, below-the-attacks that the Trump people are going to mount? And I think Buttigieg is showing that he has those abilities, certainly more so than Vice President Biden. And the others haven't shown it as much. They have good programs, well-organized, but in terms of responding quickly and dealing with, you know, unexpected attacks, who do you think is most likely to be able to do that? I think a lot of people say this young man seems to be the one.
Henry, thanks very much for your phone call. Matt, if there's something working against Buttigieg, it's going to be his age and that he has limited political experience and he's in his late 30s and he doesn't have the experience of these other candidates. How does he deal with that?
Well, so far, he's done that. He's dealt with it quite well. It has come up on campaign rallies. He's making the arguments that we're in the midst of a generational change. The same old simply isn't going to work. And so he's trying to turn his youth around as a strength. And it is attracting at least some attention. The question is whether, and we'll see tonight on the debate stage, whether Democrats are going to begin to make that a bigger issue, his opponents. And if so, whether that begins to cut into his support. Remember, he peaked earlier in this primary, and then he got some target on his back, and he saw his support begin to erode before the surprise finish in Iowa. So, you know, that is a potential vulnerability going ahead.
We're almost out of time, Ted, but tonight in the debate, are you expecting kind of the progressive liberal side, the candidates Warren and Sanders lining up against Klobuchar, Biden, and Buttigieg?
I think they're looking ahead 4 days to New Hampshire. They're going to be looking to knock down Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders. And there's real, I think it's Warren, Biden, and Klobuchar who have to stand out tonight with only, 4 days to go to New Hampshire. That's going to be the story that we're talking about in a few days.
We'll certainly be following the results of New Hampshire very closely. Many thanks to our panel today. Matt Dickinson, very glad we could get you on the air. And Ted Cohn, thank you both very much for being on the program today.
Thank you.